You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Folks, this is the first night broadcasting on our new times and our new frequencies and our new satellite. And just as usual, when things are new, things don't go like they should be, so I hope you'll excuse our late entry into this hour. The problem is not with WHRI or with The Hour of the Time, but with coordination of cues and things like that. So we'll get used to that as time goes on, folks. But let me tell you what our new schedule is and what our new broadcasting frequencies and satellites are so that you'll know where we can be heard and you can switch back and forth and find the best frequency for you. At 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific, we will be broadcasting on 7.315 megahertz, WHRI, Indiana. That's 7.315 megahertz. You can hear us on this frequency at 8 Eastern and midnight Eastern. 8 Eastern and midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can also hear us at this time on Galaxy 4, Channel 15, 7.55 megahertz. That's Galaxy 4, Channel 15, 7.55 megahertz. You'll hear us on that satellite also again at 11 p.m. And at 11 p.m., we will also be on 7.64 megahertz as well as 7.55 megahertz on Galaxy 4, Channel 15. At 11 p.m. tonight, you can also hear us on Galaxy 3, Channel 17, 5.80 megahertz. That's Galaxy 3, Channel 17, 5.80 megahertz, as well as shortwave, Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR, Nashville, Tennessee, at 5.065 megahertz. That's at 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's midnight Eastern. And we will also be heard at midnight Eastern at 7.315 megahertz and 9.930 megahertz, the WHRI transmitter in Hawaii. So, folks, here are the frequencies. 7.930, 7.315, 5.065, and satellites Galaxy 4, Channel 15, 7.55 audio and 7.64 audio. And Galaxy 3, Channel 17, 5.80 megahertz. Folks, if you think tonight is really a bad night, occult-wise or religious-wise, or if you think it's great fun and really neato, and I know all the kids are out trick-or-treating right now, you're going to learn, no matter what you believe, that real life is much more interesting and a lot scarier than anything you ever dreamed could happen on Halloween. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Come on down! asleep. Only the best of fiends can come. We'll have scary tons of fun. So come on down to the Keeper's View. I'm sure it will get rave reviews. Be on time if you can. This is Quick Jam. Quick Jam.
From the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, October 22, 1994, United States concealed human tests of radiation. Panelists uncover Cold War projects. Washington, D.C., the Associated Press. Intentional radiation releases and human experimentation appear to have been frequent and widespread in the government's Cold War nuclear programs, a presidential panel said Friday. In an interim report, the Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments said it had documented at least 400 cases of human medical experiments involving radiation and had fragmentary indications of 1,000 more. And that is not even taking into consideration the intentional release of radiation drifting in the air over populated centers to test the effects from not only nuclear reactor sites, but nuclear weapons assembly sites and several other very suspicious incidents, including a possible nuclear detonation at Port Chicago. It also said it found that hundreds of intentional releases of radiation, many more than previously suspected, had occurred as part of the country's nuclear programs between the 1940s and 1975. It was not clear from the data provided how many of those releases involved exposure of the general public or what levels of exposure were involved. But Dr. Ruth Faden, the committee's chairman, said detailed information about many of the cases may never be known because of scant or missing documents. She also complained of significant roadblocks still being erected by government officials who are refusing to declassify information about many of the radiation releases involving nuclear weapons programs. In a lot of cases, we may never have the kind of detailed information for drawing moral evaluations, said Faden, a professor of bioethics at Johns Hopkins University. The advisory committee, charged by President Clinton last December to examine the extent of human radiation testing during the Cold War, will issue its final findings in 6 months, including recommendations on whether the government should compensate victims of improper or unethical actions. Clearly, a case of the man who perpetrated the Waco massacre, calling those who perpetrated the radiation tests the black kettle. Bader said that of the 400 biomedical experiments involving human subjects documented so far, it is clear some may have had therapeutic goals, while others were aimed simply at learning more about radiation's effects on the body, something that was largely a mystery early in the nuclear age. In many cases, it remains unclear whether the subjects had given proper consent in many of the experiments, she said. But Faden said it is clear from documents uncovered so far that even in the 1940s and early 50s, there was active debate at the highest reaches of government about whether humans should be used to learn more about radiation. There were clear policies in place to safeguard subjects, but in some instances, these policies were not followed, Faden said in a news conference. She and Daniel Gutman, the panel's executive director, said while there are gaps in the information about medical experiments, even less information has been made available about the intentional releases of radiation, largely stemming from the government's nuclear weapons programs. A General Accounting Office report last year cited only 13 such releases, but the advisory panel has learned of at least several hundred such cases, and there likely are even more, Gutman said. He said the Defense Department continues to argue that details about the releases should remain classified for national security. Those of you who read my book 4 years ago got the jump on this story and a lot of others. Arkansas Democrat Gazette, October 17, 1994. Students breathe radioactive gas at plant. Students breathe radioactive gas at plant. Wiscasset, Maine, a nuclear power plant, has discontinued tours after members of a college chemistry club were exposed to radioactive gas. A spokesman for the Maine Yankee plant said there was no health threat. How would you like to be exposed? A radiology expert said the exposure could put the students at greater risk of developing several forms of cancer. The 10 students from the University of Southern Maine Chemistry Club were exposed to radioactivity Tuesday when they passed through an area in which rubidium gas had been released, said Joseph Quattrucci, the club's president. Maine Yankee spokesman Marshall Murphy said no one received a measurable dose of radiation. The gas dissipated quickly and posed no health threat, she said. However, Ernest Sternglass, professor of radiology at the University of Pittsburgh, said the danger lies in the likelihood that the students inhaled a radioactive substance, and I second that emotion. Arkansas Democrat Gazette, October 9, 1994. U.S. gutted body in radioactive cover-up widow charges. The Associated Press, Cincinnati. They came the day after Larry Hicks' heart stopped. And when they left, they took bones and liver, kidney and spleen tissue. It was, says his widow, a clandestine and ghoulish operation. Hicks had worked at the Fernald Uranium Processing Plant for a dozen years. These ghouls were agents of the federal government, and Diane Hicks is still furious at the treatment her husband's body received. We're talking about a human being. We're talking about the father of my children, she said. It's just horrible. The public should know what they're capable of doing. The United States Department of Energy says hundreds of current employees at nuclear technology sites nationwide willingly agreed to donate their organs and tissue through a volunteer program. The tissue samples and records stored at the U.S. Transuranium and Uranium Registries in Richland, Washington, are used to update radiation exposure standards and determine whether former employees of contract workers died as a result of radiation exposure, Department of Energy spokesman Ken Morgan said. But Diane Hicks and others say that the Energy Department arranged with coroners to quickly take away internal body organs of dead workers in order to destroy evidence. To destroy evidence and protect the government against lawsuits alleging the victims were killed by workplace exposure to radioactive substances. Morgan said the Department of Energy didn't do anything here other than ask for some tissue samples and the data. Louise Rossell, a lawyer for Diane Hicks, says there is no indication that Hicks or his family ever signed any consent form authorizing donation of the organs or of any body tissues. Hicks, 33, worked at the Fernald plant near Cincinnati as an inspector. On May 8, 1985, an equipment failure dumped enriched uranium on him, Diane Hicks said. 12 days later, she said, her husband awoke feeling weak and ill. He sought treatment, but died of heart failure. That day, the doctor who treated him told the coroner that the death was consistent with heavy metal poisoning. Diane Hicks said the tissues were taken from her husband's body without her knowledge or consent. She sued, but in 1986, a federal judge ruled that under Ohio law, the Hamilton County coroner had properly taken control of Larry Hicks' body and had legally ordered an autopsy. United States District Judge S. Arthur Spiegel also ruled then that National Lead of Ohio Incorporated, the Department of Energy's contract operator at Fernald, and the Hanford Environmental Health Foundation, the Department of Energy contractor that operated the Transuranium Registry at the time, were protected by the same state law in offering assistance to the coroner. And if you buy that, I've got a bridge to sell you folks. Mutilation attacks leave 8 cows dead. Arkansas Democrat Gazette, October 8, 1994. Conway. Faulkner County authorities are investigating the mutilation deaths of 8 cows, said Jim Woolley, chief deputy sheriff. In some cases, organs were removed from the cows, Woolley said. Well, he said one cow, owned by Jim Bollier, was discovered in the Mill Creek Bridge area near Guy, and the other seven were found near Valonia. Larry Nicholson found the seven cows in Valonia over a period of several weeks, Woolley said. More mysterious cattle mutilations. Governor. The California governor backs ID card to prove citizenship. I warned you people, and you won't listen. Everybody in California had better listen to this. Thursday, October 27th, 1994. Since you won't listen to me, maybe you'll listen to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. By Susan Yocum, San Francisco Chronicle. Californians will have to carry an identification card to prove they are legal residents if Proposition 187 wins voter approval November 8th. Governor Pete Wilson told the San Francisco Chronicle. In an interview, Wilson said proof of citizenship would have to be displayed in order to enroll children in school or to receive non-emergency health care. Wilson, who is seeking re-election and has made his support of Proposition 187 one of the centerpieces of his campaign, said the documentation that parents would have to show to enroll their children in school or that anyone might be asked to provide to receive non-emergency health care would be similar to that required for employment under an eight-year-old federal law. I'm talking about something that would be a single card substitute for all of the other things that are now presented to satisfy the Immigration Reform and Control Act, Wilson said Sunday during an interview at his campaign office in Sacramento. National health care was defeated, folks. They just go about it another way. And you all jump on the bandwagon, think that your life is going to be better if you get the illegal aliens out of your state. And while you're doing that, they're going to sneak in total control in the form of an identification card that for the first time in the history of this country, Americans will be required to carry to prove that you're an American, to prove that your child can go to school, to prove that you're entitled to health care, to prove that you can work. And if you buy into this, you're going to get exactly what you deserve. And I mean, folks, exactly. Again, Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Thursday, October 27th, 1994. And you should ask your local newspaper why any of these stories did not appear on their pages. Seized land gets sheriff, $41,484 check. You better listen carefully, folks. And then you'd better read the United States Constitution, for it's illegal to seize property without just compensation. Unconstitutional, in fact. Democrat Gazette, Fort Smith Bureau, Fort Smith, Arkansas. U.S. Attorney P.K. Holmes III gave Sebastian County Sheriff Gary Grimes a $41,484 check Wednesday from the sale Friday of 27.71 acres seized from a drug supplier in January. Grimes said he would use the money to buy more equipment, like cameras or vehicles, to use in drug surveillance and other operations. Grimes' office received 80% of the proceeds of the sale of the property after administrative costs and a $30,000 lien were subtracted, Holmes said. The sheriff's office arrested Richard Alona Nelson at his rural Greenwood farm January 28th and seized 46 grams of methamphetamine or crank from inside Nelson's mobile home. Nelson pleaded guilty April 22nd in federal court to possessing methamphetamine with the intent to distribute and was sentenced July 21st to 5 years in prison, 4 years of supervised release, and a $4,800 fine, Holmes said. And for those of you who think he got his just desserts, it is unconstitutional. It is not right. It is illegal to seize property without just compensation. No matter what you did, it is unconstitutional. And they don't tell you about the hundreds and thousands of innocent Americans whose property was seized and sold at auction, including bank accounts, RVs, automobiles, homes, vacation homes, property, land, ranches, boats, trailers, simply because someone said that they were drug dealers. Many of them were never charged. All of them innocent. And they can never get their property back, and it can happen to you tomorrow. Why? Because you're sheeple. Haven't I told you that before? Don't Cross This Threshold, by Richard John Newhouse, Wall Street Journal, Thursday, October 27, 1994. A panel of 19 experts appointed by the National Institutes of Health has recommended federal funding for conceiving human embryos in the laboratory for the purpose of subjecting them to experiments that will destroy them. The National Institute of Health has set a November 1st deadline for public comment, and that's tomorrow. You had better phone. You had better travel, pound, beat on the desks of your congressmen and senators and the National Institute of Health to make sure that this line is not crossed. Federal funding for conceiving human embryos in the laboratory for the purpose of subjecting them to experiments that will destroy them. Abortion is murder. This is worse than murder. One expects that most people, upon hearing such a proposal, experience an immediate and strong distaste and recoil. And that recoil should not be discounted as an irrational reaction. It may signal a deep, intuitive awareness of lines that must never be crossed if we are to maintain our sometimes fragile hold upon our own slender threads of humanity. If there's any humanity left in this nation, it had better show up now over this issue. An editorial by Naki Loeb. And this is from the Union Leader. In fact, she is the publisher, the majority owner of the Union Leader, which means somebody out there, at least in the press, is listening and concerned. Want to be scared? Here comes the United Nations. If you want to be scared, you do not have to wait until Halloween. The real boogeyman to worry about is the United Nations, which last week took another step toward establishing sovereignty over our country when a United Nations commission met to investigate racism in the United States. Granted, the United States does not yet have the authority to establish laws here concerning our handling of our internal affairs. Granted, it has not yet proposed to punish us if we fail to comply with its demands. However, didn't the United Nations do just that in Somalia, in Bosnia, in Haiti? And didn't we, as members, leap to the forefront when punishment was called for? 20 years ago, we never would have believed that our troops could be put under command of a foreign power, yet today our servicemen and women, some wearing the blue helmets of the United Nations, are being asked to risk their lives in combat under just such circumstances. The United Nations is an unwieldy conglomerate of many nations that is above the interests of any single nation, ours included. It loves our money, but hates our having the position as leader of the free world. Witness the fact that the majority of its members have continually voted against the positions of the United States of America. Jealousy makes for bitter enemies, and we suspect that most United Nations members would relish the thought that we might get our comeuppance, be it by racism committee or World Trade Police, made up of our own soldiers. We are still a free nation, and we want to remain that way. To do so, it is vital that we recognize the United Nations as a real threat to our sovereignty and to our freedom. The special computer, ladies and gentlemen, and digital effects for the motion picture Stargate were produced by Kleiser Walczak Company, which also produced special effects for Douglas Trumbull's Luxor Hotel, which was featured in a documentary produced by the Intelligence Service not long ago. As a companion to our 41 Radio Hour tape series entitled Mystery Babylon, the Hughes Hangar building in Long Beach, California, was converted into the world's largest soundstage for filming Stargate. This building is located in Long Beach Harbor and was formerly the property of Hughes Defense Industries. The interior dimensions of the building are 480 feet diameter, 138 feet to the center skylight. The building was previously used as a hangar for Howard Hughes' Spruce Goose. The building will continue to be used as a soundstage and has been contracted for the filming of Batman 3 and Spider-Man. The primary location for outside filming for Stargate was Yuma, Arizona. As an aside, the Hughes Defense Industries designed and constructed the two special purpose ships known as Glomar Explorer and Glomar Challenger. These were used in various covert United States government programs, including the deep water salvage of a Russian nuclear submarine. One of these Glomar series ships sank off the coast of Vietnam with the reported loss of all hands about 1982. The ship sank in a storm while reportedly conducting oil exploration operations. The Glomar series were homeported in Long Beach. The motion picture Stargate, many other motion pictures and television programs are psychological operations directed against the American people. Thank you, John, in Calgary, former radio and first class United States Navy. Don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We've got an awful lot to cover.
They said it couldn't be done.
Couldn't be done. Couldn't be done. Couldn't be done.
But now, at last, I've created the Frankenstein monster.
This is Count Dracula speaking. The Frankenstein monster has escaped.
Don't try to hide. I'm very afraid.
We're here in Washington at a special meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, the President.
Hello, baby.
Mr. President, what happens if the monster cannot be stopped?
Problem solved.
Army radar has picked up the monster heading toward Philadelphia.
Eastbrook reporting. We're now here in Philadelphia, where the entire U.S. Army is awaiting the battle of the century. We spy the monster coming this way. It's Frankenstein.
Just call my name.
The army has opened fire on the monster. But he still keeps coming. Hold your fire. Dr. Frankenstein's chief assistant is stepping forward. He's trying to speak to the monster.
You don't remember me, but I remember you.
The monster is attacking him. All efforts to stop Frankenstein have failed. There is only one hope left.
I, Count Dracula, will speak to the monster in the only language he understands.
Come a prima to the prima, come at all.
It's no use. Nothing can stop the monster. He's heading into the local television studio. Frankenstein is dancing on handstand. It looks like all the monster wanted to do was dance with the teenagers.
Oh, baby, that's what I like!
Of course, the story you've just heard, well...
be make-believe, folks, but I doubt it. I doubt it very seriously if you've been listening tonight. You know that real life is much scarier, much more interesting than make-believe anyway. From the Kansas City Star, Sunday, October 9th, 1994, and listen very carefully. We are now broadcasting seven times a night on two different satellites and three different shortwave frequencies due to the patriotism and the concern of Swiss America Trading. It's costing them a lot of money. Now listen to what I'm going to read to you from the Kansas City Star and understand that if you listen to this program and you derive real interest and good information, and if it has a major effect upon your life, and then you go out and deal with somebody else other than Swiss America Trading, you're not going to be listening to this broadcast very long. Understand that loyalty is one of the qualities that made America great. Patronize the people who bring you the best. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a new listener, you may not know it. But if you've been listening for a while, you know that this program, The Hour of the Time, is the very best and is the last place where you can find the truth in the entire world. From the Kansas City Star, Sunday, October 9th, 1994. Granville's gone gaga over gold. Irrepressible market guru Jacques Granville is way out in front, plowing ground again big time. While gold is coming back into vogue as inflation fears have begun to mount, even the most rabid gold bugs look timid nowadays compared with Granville. Granville, who publishes his investment newsletter out of Kansas City, declares himself the biggest gold bug in the world right now. Believe it. Granville, incidentally, is as bearish on the stock market as he is bullish on gold. He says stocks will be smashed between now and Thanksgiving. This lugubrious outlook results from the recent behavior of the market's advanced decline line, which is one of the myriad technical indicators Granville has spent a lifetime tracking. He expects the stock market swoon to last until late next year, but that's another story. The most fascinating tale currently being spun by Granville is his forecast of gold's spectacular ascendancy, which will coincide with the Treasury Department's change of United States currency to foil increasingly high-tech counterfeiters. The first denomination due for a facelift is the $100 bill in 1996, and the process won't finish until 2000. In a recent advisory, Granville told clients that as the date of the $100 changeover nears, the dumping of old bills by those involved in illegal commerce will cause gold to boom as the dumped dollars move into harder currencies and precious metals. I second that emotion. He predicts gold will go as high as $2,600 an ounce within 2 to 5 years. I predicted as long as 2 years ago that it will reach $2,500 an ounce, ladies and gentlemen. If you won't listen to me, listen to him. Remember, there are a lot of people out there who have billions of dollars in money that they cannot change legally. The only way to convert it from the old money to the new money is to buy gold or silver and then sell it at a later date. In the meantime, the price of gold and silver will escalate to unheard of highs. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. Swiss America Trading brings you this program that can also bring you financial security. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did.
Stop! Stop or I'll shoot! It's the Frankenstein monster!
Call it local and say it's alive!
This is Westbrook Van Eastbrook Jr. Frankenstein has returned! Mr. President, how do you feel about this situation?
Woe is me, I should have seen
it. The most fearless gunfighter in the West is riding in to stop the monster. It's Sheriff Tom Dooley! Sheriff Dooley, you're the only one who can save us from the monster. These two great gunmen are about to face each other. Frankenstein has one last word to Tom Dooley.
Poor boy, you're bound to die.
They've drawn their guns. As the smoke clears, only one man is emerging from the battle. It's Frankenstein. He's coming this way. This is Westbrook Van Eastbrook Jr. signing off.
Ah!
page, ladies and gentlemen, of the Detroit Free Press. Thursday, October 27th, cops launch mock raids and provoke real concerns, by Nancy Costello, Free Press staff writer. Some Cass Quarter residents were jarred out of bed by gunfire and explosions in an abandoned building behind their apartments last month. Most frightened tenants stayed inside, but some poked their heads out their windows to see what all the commotion was. Others went outside to investigate what was happening, and they were told not to worry. Police assured frightened tenants the web of men scaling the walls of the four-story apartment house were merely police officers practicing anti-terrorist maneuvers. And where have you heard the warnings about that before? Folks, right here on this broadcast, The Hour of the Time, and in my book, Behold a Pale Horse. 4 years ago, I told you that these things would happen. I told you that patriots in the New World Order would be labeled terrorists, and that patriotism would be considered to be a mental illness. A mental illness. Recently, the ADL, the anti-defamation leg of B'nai B'rith, proved me right when they issued a press release condemning all patriots as terrorists. Terrorists. Are you a patriot? You love the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Are you going to take this crap? Now notice, folks, I didn't say Jews. I said the anti-defamation league of B'nai B'rith have labeled all patriots in this country terrorists. And guess what? Anti-Semitic. Now, if you've been listening to this broadcast, you know that I'm not a terrorist. You know that I'm not anti-Semitic. And you know that I am a patriot. How about you? Do you have the guts to stand up and admit that you're a patriot now that you're going to be labeled as a terrorist and an anti-Semite by these traitors? The intention is one more chink in the armor of the sovereignty of the United States of America, and to shame people. To shame people so that they will never refer to themselves as patriots. But only yellow-bellied cowards will fall for that. Do you have guts? Are you an American? Or are you a coward? We'll find out in the coming months and in the coming years. Arkansas Democrat Gazette, October 18, 1994. Lord Rothschild was a traitor, the book says. London, a new book argues that banker and World War II intelligence agent Lord Rothschild, who died in 1990 at age 79, was part of a post-war British spy ring working for the Soviet Union. Rothschild was the notorious fifth man in the ring that included legendary spy Kim Philby. Australian writer and documentary filmmaker Roland Perry says in the book entitled The Fifth Man. From the Psychiatric Times, October 94. Psychiatric records may go to new regional health data banks. They're putting together a centralized data bank on every person in this country. Provisions in House and Senate health care reform bills would probably require psychiatrists to send patient records to the new regional data banks those bills would create. The data banks, called Health Information Protection Organizations, would be the cornerstone of new efforts to determine when medical treatments are cost-effective, as well as to facilitate payment within this new federalized health system. And if you buy that, I get another bridge to sell you. From the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Monday, October 17, 1994, middle school sex quiz goes too far, parents complain. Hampton, Virginia. Susan Leonard was horrified when her two sons, a sixth grader and an eighth grader, started talking about being quizzed in school about their options if they got a girl pregnant. She got mad when the older boy said he was forced to answer, even though he objected. It comes across that when you date, it's a given that sex is involved, Leonard said. My husband and myself are trying to instill that this is unacceptable. Leonard isn't the only one who's angry about the questionnaires given in the past few weeks to all Hampton Middle School and some high school students. The questionnaires are designed to test students' knowledge about the legal and financial responsibilities of teen pregnancy. The questionnaires have caused such an uproar that the Hampton Council of PTAs has scheduled a special meeting November 1st to let parents discuss the issue with authorities. And I'm trying to see here if they have any questions. Oh, here we go. Leonard, whose sons attend Eaton Middle School, said she would have gotten her children excused. Even the questions that focused on the financial burden of a teen pregnancy were inappropriate for her 14-year-old, let alone her 11-year-old, she said. One of the multiple choice questions for sixth grade boys asked students what they would do if a pregnant girlfriend accused them of being the father. Quote, "You are not sure you are because she dated other guys during the same time you were seeing her," it says. "On what grounds can you deny that you are the father?" It then lists five options, including calling the girl a liar, basing paternity on the results of a blood test is the correct answer. "I never thought this would be covered on a sixth grade level," said Diane Harbulak, mother of a fourth grader and a tenth grader. "Everyone I talk to is livid." Well, folks, you're going to have to make up your own minds. And this is sad. I was in Waco, Texas, and covered what happened there with my wife and my daughter, Pooh. Also there was Linda Thompson and a handful of other people who really understood what was happening and cared. Most of the nation bought the propaganda and the lies handed out to them on a silver platter by the government. And I heard Christians say, in the nation that our forefathers created in order to escape religious persecution in the old world, I heard Christians say this, quote, "They were just a bunch of religious fanatics and they got what they deserved," end quote. Now listen to this. News release, Waco, Texas. Burial of the Branch Davidian bodies, the ones that were not claimed. Today, with the beginning of daylight and the downpouring of rain, 27 graves were dug in the Restland Cemetery, the pauper's graveyard in Waco. In attendance were all the local Branch Davidians, some Branch Davidian supporters, and about a dozen from the press. The justices of the peace who were in charge of the autopsies announced on television that the bodies would be buried with dignity. Not so. The sheriff's department had cordoned off the dig site with yellow crime scene tape to keep onlookers some 100 feet away. And this was the first assault upon the dignity of the dead. They cordoned off the dig site with yellow crime scene tape. When is enough enough? When the backhoe completed the hole, which was only about 5 feet deep, the black van backed up to the grave, and in seconds the box would be in the ground with the backfilled dirt being immediately dumped in. When each site was completed, a metal placard was stuck in the ground. There was no announcement, no ceremony. No information was given as to which body was being buried. In fact, we didn't know who was buried until the digging was complete and the cleanup was finished, which was about 2 p.m. when they allowed us to view the markers. Earlier, we made a vain attempt to learn when the Jones bodies were to be buried, as the two children of David Jones were to witness his burial. Finally, the deputy sheriff said that David was already in the ground. There was no dignity, no respect, no concern. Of the 27 graves, 5 were marked unknown, 2 were marked unknown Martinez, and 1 was marked unknown Martin. 1 grave had 2 bodies marked Cyrus and Star Howell. The justices had repeatedly stated that they had 3 bodies they could not identify. So now we have 8 unknowns. First, we were told that they had 19 bodies in the freezer, then it was 21, then it was 30 bodies, then it was 30 plus 4 or 5 random bodies, then it was almost 40 bodies. Now, if we are to believe these consummate liars, they buried 20 bodies. What happened to all the others? Is it possible that some of these boxes are empty? What are they hiding? Why were the justices conspicuously absent today? Even without the tissue and fluid samples, these bodies can reveal important forensic evidence as related to the gunshot holes. The issue is that many of the bullet holes to the victim's head were .45 caliber. The Branch Davidians, ladies and gentlemen, did not own any .45 caliber guns. The belief is that a CERT team was in the building just before the fire to murder these people. This event was a healing for some, sadness for many, helplessness for others. But for the writer of this article, it's the culmination of rage and contempt. I say unto you that none of us are safe from the tyranny that is sure to come. We all will have some serious decisions to make in the coming months. For those of you who have read my book, Behold a Pale Horse, you know what FEMA means, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And you know about the executive orders that have been signed that in case of a declaration of national emergency, martial law could be declared at any moment, and FEMA could take over local, state, and federal government across the nation. It has been the policy of the United States government to make sure that a national emergency has been declared at all times for the past, ladies and gentlemen, listen to this, 61 years. For the past 61 years. The latest, and these are laws, you know, we're supposed to have a system of checks and balances, a balance between the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government. But through the initial declaration of emergency upon the bankruptcy of the United States government way back in 1938, the judicial branch was placed under the executive branch and no longer functions as a check or a balance. As federal judges receive their paychecks from the executive branch and not from the judicial branch of government. And that is when you began to see for the first time flags with yellow fringe in our courtrooms, denoting an equity court sitting under admiralty jurisdiction. This was consummated with President Truman, signed, and then the United States Senate ratified the United Nations Treaty, followed closely by the United Nations Participation Act, which was pushed through Congress, signed by President Truman, and became the law of the land. And I have documented on this program the hour of the time, and you've heard it nowhere else, that by interpretation of Article 6 of the United States Constitution, this treaty takes precedence over the Constitution. And ever since, we have been slowly propelling ourselves through being manipulated by those who really know, manipulating the sheeple who know nothing, into a one-world, totalitarian, socialist government. And now, the president writes law. If he cannot get what he wants through Congress, he writes executive orders, which then become law. And that is unconstitutional. All of these things are legal under the United Nations Charter, but not under the Constitution. So there are no longer any checks and balances in this country, and the Congress, ladies and gentlemen, the House of Representatives and the Senate function only as a rubber stamp for the executive branch. And whatever the executive branch determines it once done is enforced by their arm known as the Justice Department. And now President William Clinton, a proven Marxist, a draft dodger, a socialist Marxist par excellence, has written executive order number 12923. 12923 of June the 30th, 1994. And let me read to you the first paragraph of this executive order. Maybe, just maybe, it might help some of you reach a conclusion that many of us reached many years ago. And by the way, folks, before I read this, let me tell you, if you would like to read my book, over 500 pages of the most suppressed, most well-documented, hidden information ever published in this country, entitled Behold a Pale Horse. If you're a member, send $20. If you're a non-member, and you know if you are or not, send $25. It's post-paid to the Intelligence Service. Make checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. That's A-N-N-I-E. Send it to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420. That's P.O. Box 1420. Sholo, spelled exactly as it sounds, Show and Low, Arizona, 85901. That's $20 if you're a member, $25 if you're not a member. Big checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Send them to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. The name of the book is Behold a Pale Horse. I'm William Cooper. And now, Executive Order 12923 of June 1994. And I quote, by the authority vested in me as President, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including but not limited to Section 203 of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, 50 United States Code, 1702, I, William J. Clinton, President of the United States of America, find that the unrestricted access of foreign parties to United States goods, technology, and technical data and the existence of certain boycott practices of foreign nations in light of the expiration of the Export Administration Act of 1979, as amended, 50 United States Code, App 2401, et sequitur, constitute an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States, and hereby declare a national emergency with respect to that threat. If that is true, ladies and gentlemen, why is the United States government propelling us into treaties such as NAFTA and GATT? Answer that, and I'll give you both bridges and throw in a third. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you all. Thank you.